or where I was. But why did that go away? Why doesn't that happen again?
Yeah, that's a fair question, sure.
I mean, I don't even know if I liked it or anything, but...
Yeah, that's a good point. You might not have.
I thought it was okay, but it was clear, but it wasn't like...
Yeah.
You know. It didn't have, you know, other than sort of like, you know, feeling like there wasn't any self or anybody so much. Yeah, it wasn't like, you know, how some people describe it as some, however well, that may be.
You know, in addition to recalling the pleasantness of a prior event, you know, you can see if you can find that same, let's call it perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's present, also
presently
fine, but yeah.
Yeah. Without the churning of mind in so-called present experience, it's not that difficult to see or notice or feel that one's present experience is unconditioned. You don't have any evidence for anything at all. And yet, what we call mind will try to convince you or itself of being consequential, being a durable outcome, or a willful, you know, decider or chooser or creator. But there's no actual evidence for it. Because each moment and each gesture occurs, you know, autonomously and in a purely unconditioned manner. You know, in a sense, you can... You can just let, you can put your mind on notice and, you know, say, hey, hey, fuck off.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, you know, just like, you know, an annoying pet or child or a person you don't like at the office, you know, you tell them politely, diplomatically, or assertively to fuck off. And you can certainly do the same thing with the habit of trying to orient yourself through the myth of conditioning. It's like, well, fuck off. Not that difficult, really. But you see, we kind of habitually turn and return to the myth of processing, the myth of individuation, you know, hoping to exercise control or authority, which is just imaginary. Or rather than turning to processing or mind, or sensual experience, to continue to foment the myth of individuation, you can just, you know, ask your entire schizophrenic self to fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
And here you are. Here this is. You know, even the kind suggestion of not knowing is too much. Like, not know what? Then one, you know, again, creates a kind of an effortful response to, you know, being the perfecter of not knowing.
Well, conditioning would be negated too, no?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but even negation is too late. Because there's nothing to negate. If negation is a reaction of any kind to the imagination of anything found, well, it's too late. Neti neti is always too late. Well, not this, not what, not where, not when, not, excuse me, not what. What are we're trying to slough off or free ourselves from, you know, imaginary burden. In hopes of finding, what? Momentary relief, momentary freedom, or some kind of future peace? Then we remain within the, you know, field of reactivity as the consequence of things or the consequence of events. Because, oh, I'm burdened, and so what shall I do with all this burden? Well, I'll neti neti it away. Mm. Like, too late. So the habit of creating self is a, you know, it's a very curious and surreptitious kind of habit, which we're not doing, by the way.
Hmm.
So if you're not the author of creating self, then you certainly don't have to be, you know, you don't have to find a remedial intervention for it. Really, it's just, hey, everybody and everything, just fuck off. And you could say the habitual insistence of mind to process itself, to remain in the game, you know, to crave freedom, just becomes moot. Wouldn't it be more efficient to not be the product of the imagination of bondage than to busy oneself craving freedom? If we're craving freedom, it's too late. Freedom from what? Freedom for whom? If only I could feel this way. If only I could, you know, be more mindful. If only a pleasant spiritual event from the past could repeat once again to give me a flavor.
There's more curiosity than if only. I don't know that I liked it. I want okay. Something better than that. Thank you.
Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
But I, you know, I feel what you're saying.
It's, you could say it's because we have or are interpreting present experience or the memory of present experience through the lens of, you know, sensual, mindful, spiritual, emotional processing grids that we can find, you know, unsatisfactoriness. that we can imagine ourselves to be the under the influence of some kind of distortion. But who's creating those in the first place? So then, you know, if realization is something, and who knows whether it is or isn't, and that's its problem. You know, it's like Peter Brown's problem. It's not your problem. But if there is anything of the sort, then it's like, who cares? Isn't it fun? I mean, you have to imagine yourself in a condition, then you have to imagine self-realization as being a different order of magnitude of some kind of condition, and then craving is the bridge. You know, well, gee, Wayne seems happy. Paul Hederman seems happy. Matt Kahn seems, you know, deluded but happy. But, you know, again, what happens is it's the same old cul-de-sac of, celebrity envy. In this case, it's enlightenment celebrity envy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes they talk it up.
Sometimes they do?
Yeah.
Well, that's because in each and every respect, you know, the ego maniac flares up. Yeah. Or you could say it's a natural impulse to want to share windows into joy.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's cool. But you can see what happens is when someone even sincerely shares, you know, windows into joy, what gets created in us is, you know, dichotomy, comparison, and craving. Because we imagine them in a certain experience, or we imagine ourselves from the past in a certain experience that we imagine we're not presently having now. And so wouldn't it be nice? And that's where the, you know, so-called seeker dwells for the long haul or the short haul in, you know, this perpetual refrain of wouldn't it be nice?
Well, it seems like an initial spark. I don't know after the initial spark, but, you know, some sense of like, you know, if there's no seeking from the get-go, seems like you're living in the world of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
Whatever sparks it up, I don't know. But.
Involuntary forgetfulness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A turtleneck you're wearing makes you look like you're like a head.
I'm just a floating head.
So funny.
Yeah, it doesn't help, really.
That was a good effect, you know.
It's... Yeah. Well, I spoke to my stylist, and this is what she came up with.
Makes you look like an acting teacher, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right.
But I guess but there is a sense of like, you know, the defeat, the agony of defeat as, you know, if you're seeking and you're defeated at every turn, then there's nowhere to go.
No. Yeah. Well, that's the, you know, this, you could call it very rudimentary, well, you could call it an entrapment or a, you know, a playful seduction.
Mm-hmm.
Consciousness imagines that it is, that it's of some nature. So, you know, a sense of boundary of I, me, my, time, space, content, context occurs absolutely spontaneously and then gets contributed to, let's say, over the course of a lifetime. And we're, you know, playing around with, what would you call it? Spontaneous expungement. And spontaneous expungement is, well, it's at hand. It's always at hand. And it's the, you know, the habit, perhaps unwanted and involuntary habit of, you could say, enjoying or suffering the imagination of getting from to. Mm-hmm. From and to, right? From is the inertia of the content and context of the myth of my life. And to is freedom from conditions. So the, you know, you could say the startlement, you know, is to see that there never was a from and there certainly isn't a to, which is spontaneous expungement. Which could be felt or noticed as the cessation of the habit to process present experience.
Mm-hmm.
You're not necessarily deriving anything from present experience. You're not even interested in processing present experience. Trying to make it or convince yourself that it should be or could be something other than it is. To fulfill, you know, an imaginary, you know, anticipation of, call it psychic freedom.
It would be nice not to process, constantly process everything going on.
Yes, that's right.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. It would be, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's, you know, that's a firsthand appreciation of spontaneous expungement. Yeah, you're just not processing this. It's not like you've dropped the ball. It's just, there's nothing here to process. You're a vapid idiot. It's the best thing that ever happened to you.
Well, nothing new there.
Nothing new there. Yeah. So there's a felt sense. Of this being this, which isn't saying much. And, you know, this kind of remarkable relief or release from the inertia from the habit of processing present experience through the lens of conditioning. Ta-da. Nobody has anything better. Nobody has any wisdom. Nobody has any knowledge. Mm. There are no secrets. Nobody can keep you alive past your, you know, allotted time. All the healers and everyone they healed are dead. So, you know, what are we holding out for? You know, a tap on the shoulder from our Zen master, a certificate of enlightenment from Paul Hederman, which he's happy to give you. You know, an acknowledgement of some kind from, you know, Adyashanti. And fuck you, Adyashanti. and your soft-spoken wife, too. The end of processing, the end of conditioning is yours alone. Really, it's yours alone. You don't even have to be that good at it. The myth of creaturehood. The myth of creaturehood is, you know, it's undignifying. And we sign up over and over and over again. We enroll in this, you know, undignifying identity. Suffering the way that we do. Craving the way that we do. Getting, you know, a carrot and some candy from time to time.
Yeah, well, that sums it up.
Pretty simple. Mm-hmm. We don't need an elaborate cosmology from anybody. That includes Nirsagadatta's cosmology and Nirgun John's cosmology. What's his name? Sri Aurobindo's cosmology. You don't need to have a clever causal map of reality, because there is none. So you can be absolutely uninformed.
I'm working on that.
Yeah, absolutely uninformed. And everyone can just fuck off. It's not like Shinzin Young has arrived anyplace. Or his nemesis, the idiot Dzogchen narcissist.
I think it's his nemesis or anything, but that'd be fun.
Yeah. He hasn't arrived anywhere either. Yeah. You know, these are just, both of them are just clever pundits. doling out a
couple of airbags.
A couple of airbags, doling out, you know.
Windbags and airbags.
Doling out recommendations to accelerate your enlightenment. You got to be fucking kidding me. And everyone is like, oh yeah, I'm going to do what you said. I'm going to meditate and read and find a master who's worthy of my, you know, mm-hmm. aspiration. And I'm going to visit with them at least once a year. And boy, am I on the fucking road. The road to Dorlu.
Dorlu, I don't know what time it is.
It's a tiny little town in Oswego County, not far from Cooperstown.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
On that.
Somewhere off of Route 7.
Big lake there?
Yeah, not far from the lake. Yeah. There's like two cows there.
Yeah?
And that's it. Yeah, two cows in a pasture and a green New York State sign that says Dorlu.
Huh.
You know you've arrived when you get to Dorlu. There's just fucking nothing there. And that's like, oh, yeah, I get it. Dorlu.
Hmm.
Why is there even a place called Dorlu? There needn't be. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's me. I've arrived at Dorlu. There's just two cows standing, and I can't even see a barn from here. Great. I didn't realize it was that easy. You see the nagging sense of, oh, this isn't right. This isn't enough. This isn't the truth. I'm deluding myself. I need to respond. I'm sorry, where did that come from? Where did it come from? The voice that says, this isn't it, this isn't right, this isn't enlightened, I am suffering. I have to, you know, I haven't seen my master in over 2 years. I can't, I'm not going to wake up at this rate. Shinzen, help. Shinzen, help. Shit, I haven't had a good idea about anything in a week. How am I going to get enlightened that way? Phew. Wow. So there's this crazy, right, habitual, involuntary, nearly incessant consideration of one's experience through some kind of, you know, lens that tells us what's happening or how I'm doing or how I'm feeling or whether this is optimal. Whether I'm as happy as I think I want to be or wish to be or need to be or deserve to be. Jesus Christ. So it's like we have our own evangelical choir living within our own mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's convincing us that, you know, this is no good. That this can't be it. It's a whole fucking, it's a whole choir.
Mighty Aphrodite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a pipe organ. Yeah, and backup singers.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're no good. This isn't it. You're no good. Everybody's saying, you're no good. This isn't it. You're no good. This can't be it. What? Just get out of the church. Leave the church.
Well, it's usually accompanied by an affect state, too, that doesn't feel good.
Yeah. Yeah, because we're dependent upon physical sensation. You know, the rapture of sensuality.
Like even the most painful emotions, at least they have a pleasure-pain component. But when it's just that vague sort of feeling, which is hard to pin down, it's like, that's the worst.
Well, again, you know, you see what happens, that there's a sense of loyalty as we're trying to extract meaning and sensation and condition or position, coordinates, from the way that this is feeling.
Mm-hmm.
As if there's, you know, a causal or beneficial relationship between anything that can be found in consciousness and what it is portraying. And that's how we convince ourselves of, you know, the imaginary condition that we're in. That this is, well, this isn't what I'm after. This feeling is not what I want to be feeling. So we continue to reinforce the dependency relationship with our own interpretation of experience as being somehow meaningful. You see, if you're relying on anything at all as evidence for a condition that you're in, well, then you're in a condition. And if you find yourself in a condition, it's not but a baby step to find yourself in an unsatisfactory condition. Because all conditions are unsatisfactory.
Mm-hmm.
That's so true. You're not going to find a set of satisfactory conditions. And even if you stumble upon, you know, one or two for a minute or so, they're just going to disappear. They're going to be, you know, ongoingly evasive.
Yeah, those are the worst good ones.
Yeah. Well, they're kind of good for a short time. And then they create another wave of, you know, craving in hopes that they should repeat. That's the, you know, that's the nature of this. We're not, quote, free because we continue to find ourselves in a condition or of the nature of conditioning, and by virtue of imagining ourselves in a condition or the product of conditioning, all we can find is the unsatisfactoriness that accommodates or accompanies that condition. So we blame it on ourselves. Or we blame it on conditions for our unsatisfactoriness, the dukkha. We think, well, if the conditions were different, if they were better, you know, my hair, my diet, my weight, my partner, my investments, how frequently I talk to my mother.
Mm.
If only. And I mean, that's cool. I sure, you know, we sure understand the endless litany of conditions and how unsatisfactory they are. And even when those conditions change, they're still unsatisfactory. So there's something, you could say, more magical about the nature of consciousness presuming itself to be incarcerated. If you find one condition, you've found a million. And any one of those apparent conditions can be felt or experienced as being unsatisfactory for the reasons the Buddha suggested. They're temporal, transparent, transient, and not self. So all conditions found that tend to objectify experience as being my experience will be will be accompanied with that same, you know, strange sense of inner condemnation. So even the most emboldened, you know, white supremacist Republicans seem like they've got it all together, are, you know, suffering from this existential self-condemnation. and then we end up with all these clever compensatory, you know, styles and personalities to make it appear to the world that we are not suffering from unending internal self-condemnation. Because, hey, you know, I've been to spiritual sites, or I've had, you know, out-of-body meetings with the Karmapas, or I'm gifted in astrology or tarot, or I'm a healer. So therefore, I want to be able to convince everyone that I'm not suffering from incessant self-condemnation, and I can be counted on to be, you know, a valuable contributor to the suffering of the world at large. Like, oh, really? Who are you kidding? That's the ruse. Everyone wants to pretend to be better than the habit of self-shaming by having access to knowledge and wisdom and secrets and magical gifts. Oh, fuck you. Or I've studied Buddhism long enough that I can speak on behalf of the Buddha and then give you meaningful instructions on how best to accelerate your enlightenment. Like, fuck you. The fuck are you talking about? You see how weird it is? It's just so weird. It's just this whole notion of, you know, suffering and not suffering, and, you know, masters of the faith have accomplished, you know, some kind of liberation, and we want to, you know, study that and then dole it out and make a living, you know, being mouthpieces for it and pretend that we have accomplished or achieved something and that we are no longer codependent or suffering from incessant self-condemnation and that we can be relied upon to be an intervener in your fucking suffering for a fee. Wouldn't it be nice? It's just it's the same old refrain over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Whether you go see Adyashanti or Byron Katie or, you know, Locke Kelly or Stephen, what's his name, who's dead. Who's that guy? That guy. Stephen Levine. Levine.
He dead.
Stephen Levine's dead, yeah.
Yeah.
Checked out.
But there's other Stevens. So one of those.
Stephen Bodian. He knows all there is about thought.
That's right. Stephen Bodian. That's right.
What a cluckhead. You know, therapists? You mean therapists know stuff? You mean you can't line up all these fucking therapists and tell me these assholes are free of the incessant ruse of self-condemnation? Just look at them. Narcissistic egomaniacs.
Crazy neurotic lot. Yeah.
That's right. A crazy neurotic lot. Prendergast. Bodian. You know, Dick. Yoga Nidra Dick. We always called him Dick for a reason. It's too funny. And what keeps that shit going? I'll tell you what. Our craving. That's what keeps it going. How do these people stay in business? Our naivete and our craving keeps them in business, keeps them afloat. because we would like to imagine or imbue them with the the unearned crystal ball of having graduated from self-condemnation. It's not going to work.
Some people seem like they like themselves.
Well, that's their problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some people can't help me. You can't really borrow from the freedom of another. But you can get stuck in the loop of, call it resonance, or borrowing from the freedom of another. I mean, a whole fuckload of people did it with Ramana Maharshi, and have done it with gurus wide and far, way before him and ever since. Papaji and Muji and Andrew Cohen and Gangaji and Eli Jackson Bear who shits in the woods and wipes his ass with squirrels. That's kind of a long Native American name. Are you Eli Jackson Bear who shits in the woods and wipes your ass with squirrels? Yes, that's me. Glad to meet you. Or Gabriel Cousins, yellow horse piss. He's an official Sioux or Hopi or something.
That was his name?
Yellow horse piss.
You gave to him or the native people did?
Well, they gave him yellow horse. I added the last part.
Oh, okay.
The the animus of deriving or derivation, the animus of deriving something meaningful, spiritual, pleasant, grandiose from the field of present experience, that is the myth of self. That's the myth of time. That's the myth of location, creaturehood. Curiosity that's moving in a grasping manner, in a self-presuming, self-justifying, self-promoting manner, Yeah. Like, so we place ourselves on stage. In our own mind. And then we posture with each other through the, you know, the projection of that persona. We posture with each other through the presumption of a projected persona. For territory. You know, for authority. For attention seeking and attention giving. And you could say it's kind of a biological imperative, you know, maybe it's a cellular, biological, circadian, right, reproductive imperative, and that it's operating, you know, on a more elaborate scale through the persona.
Maybe.
Yeah, but maybe not. I don't know.
It's too weird to.
Yeah, it could be too weird.
Come to any conclusions about.
Anything. Yeah. Absolutely. It could be too weird to have any kind of cosmology.
I mean, they want to reduce everything to some sort of evolutionary biology, psychology, but this doesn't make any sense at all.
No, that's right. Yeah, it needn't make any sense at all.
So much variation and behavior. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
How can you apply it to just something like that?
Yeah. Now the freedom sneaks up on you. It's never the result of anything.
Mm.
It's not the consequence of anything. When the mind fasts, if you will, when it is released from the burden of processing. You know, a different quality of intelligence is, let's say, released. You know, availability without anticipation, availability without vigilance. Sacred kind of abiding without having to get on a, you know, soapbox. There's a passion there, but it needn't be consummated passion. It has as much ferocity, you know, as it does innocence. It could just as easily bite your hand off or, you know, lick a wound. You don't have to be committed, you know, one way or the other. I'm not coming from a place. I'm not in a condition. I don't have any wishes or anticipation. I'm not processing present experience. It's okay to be the fool. I'm not deriving anything from present experience. I'm not making it about anything. I'm not convincing myself of anything. I can become, you know, a loathsome egomaniac on a dime. Oops. Yikes. I was trying to earn all these, like, brownie points, and I lost them all. It's like enlightenment shoots and ladders. You know. 1 minute you're the sanguine Brahmin, and the next minute you're sorry you even exist. and all you've got to offer is a trunk load of apologies.
That's why it's best if I don't leave the house.
Yeah, exactly. Stay in the house. Surround yourself with cats. They're very forgiving. You know, even meditation seems, you know, silly, too much emphasis.
Well, back in the day, they didn't have these online discussions, so that was all they had.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Back in the day.
Yes.
Whenever that was.
Although they certainly didn't have any technology to distract themselves, so.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah, it comes with the double-edged sword, as they say. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's nice to be, what could you say, you know, deliciously disinterested in anybody else's condition.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, phew, what? Ramana who? What? Maharishi who? What, you know, what, quoting what, quoting whom? What? For what? What did they say? About what? You know, that's like the cheerleader squad.
Well, that's what they are. They're like cheerleader squad.
Yeah, it's a cheerleader squad.
You can do it.
I am the absolute. I am the absolute. Like, all right, put your arms down. Just untangle that pyramid. Everyone get back to the ground. Yeah. Drop the pom-poms and the flags and stuff. That this is unconditioned, well, that can really kick your ass. Repeating over and over how unconditioned it is. Fuck that. I guess Nan never showed.
I can hear Beth coughing. She's got a bad cough.
She's getting better.
That's good.
She's taking a lot of vitamin C.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's that winter thing, low vitamin D, lethargy, you know, seasonal affective disorder, consciousness affective disorder.
Yeah.
I got SAD, I got CAD, absolute affective disorder, I got AAD.
I did look like I had some flights to Florida, you know, but then I'm like, sounds nice, but slow.
Yeah. 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 You just have to pack a pair of shorts and a blouse, you know, maybe a bathing suit, flip flops, just jump on the fucking plane.
Yeah.
You know,
nice if you could do that, you know, just kind of.
Yeah.
Like planning anything.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go stay at an airport motel for cheap and rent a car and just sit on the sand all day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go to a lizard park and, you know, eat fried alligator or something.
Have you done that?
Yeah. 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 Alligator tastes like chicken.
I saw some tickets that were around $100 round trip, but it's still like too much work and too much money at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if your body really craves the sunlight and the warmth, you know, you're just like, fuck it, I'm going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have my Bed Bath & Beyond super light, you know.
Yeah, 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 yeah. You have your blight box, right?
Yeah.
Trying to up the serotonin.
It helps.
Mm-hmm, sure.
At least placebo-wise.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the days are getting longer. It won't be long now.
Won't be long now.
I don't think so.
I wish I had something to say.
I feel the same way.
I'm trying to. There's nothing coming for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we probably are, huh?
What's that?
That's just asking me whether we're still talking or not.
I couldn't hear her. I thought you were just like responding to internal auditory hallucinations.
I think I might be. Uh-oh. All right, well, thanks.
All right.
Thanks for your company.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right.
See you later.
See you soon.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for the letter.
Okay. All righty. Bye.
Bye-bye.